Welcome back. This is Daily Buddhism audio show number 24. I'm Brian Schell, your host for the show. You can find the text for everything in this show and all past episodes on our website at www.dailybuddhism.com. Keep your questions coming in. Send your questions on Buddhism and related subjects to dailybuddhism@gmail.com or phone them in to our voicemail line at 937-660-4949. You can also post your thoughts about anything we discuss on the website's blog at www.dailybuddhism.com. And I did get another phoned-in message this week. This one had to do with the sound quality of the podcast itself. Here goes.
Hi, Brian. This is Chris calling from Texas, and I wanted to let you know that I'm a beginner Buddhist, and I really appreciate your podcast. Get a lot out of it each and every week that you do post, especially the simple, laid-back approach, as also the as well as the academic style that you present your information. I did want to say thank you for the service and keep up the good work. I only had but a slight critique. When I'm listening on my iPod, I really like that you take the music and break up the different sections as you move from topic to topic. The only problem is the volume level is not quite even. And so when I'm listening to the actual vocal message and the parts that you play that are people speaking, and then the music hits, it seems to be quite loud. It kind of blows out my earphones just a little bit. So if you could work on maybe getting that leveled, I think that would be make a more pleasurable listening experience. I'm not sure if you would like to add this to your daily or to your weekly podcast or not. It's not too appropriate in the content, so I'll leave it up to you. I really don't care either way. But if you could work on leveling out that volume from the music to the text, I surely would appreciate it. Thank you so much for everything that you do, and keep up the good work. Bye-bye.
And that's a good suggestion, and one that's easily fixed. When I'm finished recording a show, I usually just play it back on the same computer I use for recording, and they usually sound fine to me. But since you let me know about the problem, I'll set the volume on those a little lower from now on. If you have any other comments or suggestions, let me know. I think the sound quality has increased tremendously since the first episode, but I'll be the first to admit there's still plenty of room for improvement. I'm not a sound engineer. Last week, I had to record the entire show twice because GarageBand crashed while it was saving the final file for the show. I like doing the show, but doing it twice is no fun at all. But we had an interesting assortment of topics this week, so let's get on with the show. Let's start out with this week's chapter of the Dhammapada. This week we are up to chapter 8, The Thousands. Even though a speech be 1,000 words, but made up of senseless words, one word of sense is better, which if a man hears, he becomes quiet. Even though a Gatha poem be 1,000 words, but made up of senseless words, one word of a Gatha is better, which if a man hears, he becomes quiet. Though a man recite 100 gathas made up of senseless words, one word of the law is better, which if a man hears, he becomes quiet. If one man conquer in battle 1,000 times 1,000 men, and if another conquer himself, he is the greatest of conquerors. One's own self conquered is better than all other people. Not even a god, a Gandharva, not Mara with Brahman, could change into defeat the victory of a man who has vanquished himself and always lives under restraint. If a man for 100 years sacrifices month after month with 1,000, and if he but for one moment pay homage to a man whose soul is grounded in true knowledge, better is that homage than sacrifice for 100 years. If a man for 100 years worship fire in the forest, and if he but for one moment pay homage to a man whose soul is grounded in true knowledge, better is that homage than sacrifice for 100 years. Whatever a man sacrifice in this world as an offering or as an oblation for a whole year in order to gain merit, the whole of it is not worth a quarter. Reverence shown to the righteous is better. He who always greets and constantly reveres the aged, four things will increase to him: life, beauty, happiness, power. But he who lives 100 years, vicious and unrestrained, a life of 1 day is better if a man is virtuous and reflecting. And he who lives 100 years, ignorant and unrestrained, a life of 1 day is better if a man is wise and reflecting. And he who lives 100 years, idle and weak, a life of 1 day is better if a man has attained firm strength. And he who lives 100 years, not seeing beginning and end, a life of 1 day is better if a man sees beginning and end. And he who lives 100 years, not seeing the immortal place, a life of 1 day is better if a man sees the immortal place. And he who lives 100 years, not seeing the highest law, a life of 1 day is better if a man sees the highest law. And then our koan for the week, called The Muddy Road. Tenzan and Ikido were once traveling together down a muddy road. A heavy rain was still falling. Coming around a bend, they met a lovely girl in a silk kimono and sash, unable to cross the intersection. "Come on, girl," said Tenzan at once. Lifting her in his arms, he carried her over the mud. Ikido did not speak until that night when they reached a lodging temple. Then he no longer can restrain himself. "We monks don't go near females," he told Tenzan. "Especially not young and lovely ones. It is dangerous. Why did you do that?" "I left the girl there," said Tenzan. "Are you still carrying her?" That's one of my favorite koans. Pretty easy to understand that one. But this post in particular sparked some interesting discussion on the blog about exactly what makes up a koan. What is the intent and definition of a koan? How are they used? Why were they made? Remember, there's more to read at the website than just reposts of the daily emails. You can find many very insightful comments by the readers there as well. And we only covered one question this week. A reader recently wrote, "I've posed this question on another site and wondered what your take was. Following a statement that a Buddhist is someone who takes refuge in the three jewels. The question is, what's actually involved in taking refuge in the three jewels? I understand is accepting, realizing the way to overcome samsara is through the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, the three jewels. However, does this mean joining the Sangha, which is a bit difficult around here? Buddhists are rarer than a rare thing with a reason to be rare. Does it involve any ceremony, any ritual? Or could it just be a personal declaration in the absence of others? I'm personally happy to be someone who incorporates what he understands of Buddhism into his life, as opposed to applying a label and proclaiming, 'I'm a Buddhist.' Although lately, I'm feeling that label possibly does apply. Currently, being a husband and father occupies the vast bulk of my time. I'll practice mindfulness within my daily life with them, meditate, read my rapidly expanding library of Buddhist meditation books, while chatting about Buddhism with a new Sri Lankan student the company just contracted. But the taking refuge intrigues me, maybe because we think of taking refuge as a physical thing, and this is mental or spiritual. What is involved?" And my response to that is, I can't say I ever really gave the phrase taking refuge in the three jewels much in the way of thought. I've always taken it pretty much at face value. The first noble truth, we all know, is all life is suffering. Generally speaking, out in the physical world, taking refuge is usually done in order to relieve or remove suffering. If I'm out in the pouring rain, I'm going to take refuge under the nearest roof. And it's the same with the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. They help remove or alleviate suffering. They're metaphorical or allegorical shelters from suffering. The Buddha is my role model. When I feel bad, I read some Dharma. I enjoy and learn a lot by interacting with, emailing mostly, other Buddhists. These three sources help relieve suffering, and I've taken refuge in them. As far as your Sangha problems are concerned, you aren't alone. I don't know many Americans who are thrilled with the selection that they have of Buddhist groups in their area, and I'd be one of them. I think the best we can do is look at the term Sangha as a form of community. There are other Buddhists out there, and we do form a kind of community on the internet, if nowhere else. You read Buddhist books, and that too is a loose form of community. If you listen to podcasts or watch documentaries on TV, you're still connecting with other Buddhists. These are options that did not exist hundreds of years ago, but they're available to you now. You're learning something new regularly. And I think that's really about the best that can be done if there isn't a church in your area. A sangha isn't a building. It's a community. And another reader recently wrote in, I have a quick question. It seems that meditation is at least one of the main hearts of Buddhism. I hear there are a number of different types of meditation and styles. I'm really not sure what this means, but would be very interested. If you ever have time to put that in, I'd be very interested in learning more. Thank you for putting your knowledge out there. I know there are many of us that truly appreciate it. And then another reader writes in with almost the same thing. I practice Zen Buddhism, but have listened to many podcasts because there is no Zen center near me. In these podcasts, they often refer to other forms of meditation. Some of these are love and kindness, or stress a certain aspect of Buddhism. Would you please be so kind as to go over the different types of meditation that you know of or are aware of? Great show. And my response. Meditation has been defined as self-regulation of attention in the service of self-inquiry in the here and now. I found dozens of definitions of meditation to post here. Some of them involved self-healing, some of them had to do with philosophy, others dealt with spirituality, others were very religious. But the simple fact is that it's different things to different people. Everyone looks at it differently. That's why there are so many types of meditation and so many names for different styles of practice that it's hard to keep track. There are literally hundreds of phrases that describe various kinds and styles of meditations. There's no way we can cover them all, but over the next week or two, I'm going to focus on a half dozen or so broad categories. Today, I want to give a brief overview of meditation in general. Now, we've talked about all of this before, but a quick refresher won't hurt before starting on such a big topic. Most of next week, we're going to cover this stuff. When you hear the word meditation, you probably have a mental picture of someone sitting in the lotus position, hands clasped and eyes closed. That, or something close, is not too far from the truth, but it's definitely an overgeneralized stereotype. Not all forms of meditation involve sitting, but many do. We've briefly mentioned walking and working meditations in the past, and those are quite common and easy to perform. We'll talk about them next week. But if you're one of the many people who have written in stating that they can't sit lotus style, have no fear. I can't do it either. It's not that important, at least for the beginner. All forms of meditation can help you reduce stress and anxiety. They all do. Reduced stress is obviously a good thing, both physically and psychologically, and many doctors prescribe meditation to their patients. It's been proven effective over thousands of years. It's not some goofy New Age thing. It's safe and it's simple, and absolutely everyone can do it, starting with only 10 or 15 minutes a day. It won't cure cancer or help you lose weight, but it can help you reduce physical suffering and give you the mental clarity and fortitude to make some big changes in your life. The physical work of meditation can be done with no spiritual or religious trappings, and is a good idea for anyone, of any belief system or of any age. Buddhism, of course, adds its own dimension to meditation, but meditation was around long before Buddhism was. It goes back at least as far as Hinduism, probably much further than that even. And then on Friday, we got to the second part of the meditation series, breath watching and insight meditation. This is one of the most popular forms of meditation, and also one of the simplest to start practicing. The practitioner sits comfortably in a quiet place and simply focuses on his or her breathing. He or she sits with eyes closed, slowly breathing in and out calmly and regularly, not forcing anything. Breathe in, breathe out. Feel the air go in and let it out again. Feel the sensations in the path of the air. Feel your chest rising and falling, the lungs expanding and contracting. Feel the cool air go in and the warm air come out. Hear the sound of it all. Feel the experience of it all. Experience the breathing carefully and consciously, avoiding distractions as much as possible. And for the beginner, that's all there is to it. Take 5 or 10 minutes and try right now if you're able. You don't need to sit in any particular position, and you can do it in a chair if you'd like, on the floor if you'd like. You can lay in bed and do it if you want. The important and difficult thing in the beginning is to avoid distractions, especially your own distracting thoughts. When you become aware that your mind is wandering, calmly go back to being aware of your breathing and move your mind away from the distractions. You can do breath meditation for 5 minutes, or for hours if you like, but it's going to be hard to do for more than a few minutes in the beginning, so start small. Rather than spend a bunch of time here describing the process of breath meditation, I've posted several videos of it being demonstrated on the website. Now, at some point real soon now, I plan to record some audio meditation tools and maybe some guided meditation for all of you. That should be fun. But the videos are at www.dailybuddhism.com/archives/180. And we'll be getting into several more types of meditation next week, maybe with videos, maybe with pictures, I don't know. But we'll be covering meditation fairly thoroughly over the next week or two. But that's it for this week's episode of The Daily Buddhism. If you aren't already subscribed to the podcast through iTunes, then don't forget to do so, and you'll get every episode every week automatically. And there's also the Daily Buddhism Daily Email List, where everything happens first. Go to www.dailybuddhism.com and sign up for the daily mailing. Send in your questions and comments, dailybuddhism@gmail.com, or call it in at 660-4949, area code 937. If you'd like to support the show, there are donation buttons on the website, or you can leave feedback for us on iTunes for the show. So, see you next week.